Beautiful scenery. Is it reading an exciting book that grips you when you want to get to the end? Is it watching a film that sends tingles up and down your spine? Is it heartbreaking music that moves you to the very depths of your being? Is it just sitting in a bath with lots of bubbles and candles and music? Is it a smile from someone you love? Is it chocolate? Healthy chocolate, of course. Is it cake and sweet things? Is it scoring a goal? Is it a funny joke? Is it a beautiful sunset? Is it stroking the dog? And the dog goes like that to you. Is it doing something during the day, but then being able to go home? For me, these sort of perfect moments often come when I'm not actually looking for them. I don't say, now I'm going to have a perfect moment, and sit there waiting for it. Often it comes totally unexpectedly. It comes out of the blue for me, and I'm suddenly gripped and stunned and overwhelmed with just a feeling of joy and delight and exhilaration. It's almost like a sort of magic moment when time evaporates and I'm not even aware of time anymore. And I really can't express with words how I feel, but I want to sort of take hold of it and make it stay, make it last forever. I'm sure you'll all have your own perfect moments. If I stop long enough to think about these perfect moments, perhaps at the end of a day, I think they can be very well summed up in very, very ancient words by a philosopher. His writings are found in the Bible under the book called Ecclesiastes, where the philosopher says, "He," meaning God, "has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart." And I come to a couple of conclusions from these words, because I notice that here in this world, I'm actually living as a caterpillar. I enjoy the beauty around me, leaves sometimes, and sometimes chocolate, and sometimes more, but really I'm never fully satisfied. The writer talks about eternity in our hearts. It's almost a sort of capacity and a joy and an ability to have, to experience delight that's actually beyond our sort of fumbling, frustrated, finite lives. It's too big for us, too big for the life that we have. And even the most perfect moments are never truly enough. We're always hungry. Like Katie and Cole, the caterpillar, we just need to keep eating and eating. It's never enough. And the chocolate finishes. And if I eat too much, I feel sick. And the bubble bath that was lovely and warm and comforting goes cold, and the bubbles disappear. And the purring cat that's sitting on my lap suddenly scratches me. Or perhaps I go walking and I get sore feet, or I get wet in the rain. Or perhaps the friends with whom I'm having a wonderful time, they go home, or I fight with them. And so the moment passes, and it might be a sweet memory, but the moment passes and it's gone. The second thing I notice is that the beauty that I see makes me hungry for more. That actually there is more to life than the here and now. That life is not just accumulation of days, day after day after day. And so I long for something better, something that is beyond arthritis and bills and washing up and the monotony. That hunger, that ache, that void. And sometimes we fill it with things that actually keep us still feeling hungry. C.S. Lewis writes like this: our lifelong nostalgia, our longing to be reunited with something in the universe from which we now feel cut off, to be on the inside of some door which we've always seen from the outside, is no mere neurotic fancy, but the truest index of our real situation. At last, to be summoned inside would be both glory and honor, and also the healing of an old ache. So the delights we experience, the things that we enjoy, these are actually preparations for things to come. They point to something better. Because we are part of God's creation. And actually what we really long for is to be what we're really made to be. We long to be with Him. We long to be loved by Him and to love Him. Really, in effect, we're longing to be butterflies. Being in God's presence, that is what heaven is. When we're trying to think of the service and trying to think of a title for it, we really struggled with words like eternity and heaven, because they can conjure up in our minds strange ideas of people sort of playing harps, like perhaps some of the pictures that you saw earlier, or of people sort of jumping from cloud to cloud, eating Philadelphia light. Or perhaps we imagine sort of streets of gold and having to be nice and polite to everyone. And so sometimes it can be quite a negative thing, the idea of being forever, doing nothing, how dull and boring that might seem to us. And so it's difficult to imagine heaven, perhaps a little bit like Cole and Katy the caterpillars. They can't begin to imagine what it's going to be like until they are butterflies. And yet that longing inside is a longing that we have to be butterflies. I was really encouraged as I read this book by Johnny. Johnny has been in a wheelchair for the last 30 years. She can't move, I think, from the neck down. And so being so disabled as she is and working with many people with disabilities has really made her think, is this life and is this world all that there is? If you have a really rotten life with pain and suffering and misery, is that it? Or is there something else? And she's written a book called Heaven, What Will It Be Like? And this is what she says: we cannot conjure heaven in our minds because our desires go deeper than our minds can imagine. We're longing to be butterflies. Life on this earth is beautiful. It is. It's wonderful. But it's also terribly hard and painful. And a Christian faith makes all the difference in this world. Knowing Jesus, in many ways, fills the hunger that we feel. And yet we're still caterpillars. We're still hungry for more. Being Christians means that we look at life in a very different way. And our everyday activities, we do look at them differently. But they're still what C.S. Lewis calls, it's still shadow lands. It's still not quite real and perfect. Knowing that there's forgiveness for the past, that there's strength for the present, that there's hope for the future, that makes such a difference. And it means that Christians don't just believe in pie in the sky when you die. Knowing Jesus makes a real difference today to my life now. But it also makes a difference to how I see the future, how I think about life after today. And it makes a difference to know that this life is not the end, that there actually is a future assurance. That this is really important. When I live my life, when I'm full of yearnings that are never satisfied, when I live my life in real disappointment, when things hurt me, when there are tragedies, when there are terrible things that happen, it's really important for me to know that one day the pain and the anguish that I feel, that others around me feel, one day that will be swallowed up. And that one day the longings that I have, the longings that you have, will be satisfied. This is a prayer that the Puritans wrote, perhaps, I suppose, 400 years ago, and I rather like it. It says, "O Lord, I live here as a fish in a vessel of water, only enough to keep me alive. But in heaven, I shall swim in the ocean. Here I have a little air in me to keep me breathing, but there I shall have sweet and fresh gales. Here I have a beam of sun to lighten my darkness, a warm ray to keep me from freezing. Yonder I shall live in light and warmth forever." We're going to sing a song now that reminds us of some of these truths. You should recognize it. The tune is Finlandia. We'll stand to sing.
Anybody who doesn't know who I am, my name is Julie. If you don't know me, you probably know more famous members of my family, including the handsome man at the piano, who is my husband. Also with me this morning are my children. I have two sons, Joel and Noah, and a little daughter called Sophie. Fiona asked me to participate this morning by sharing some thoughts with you on longing for heaven. And she didn't seem put off at all by the fact that I've actually never been to heaven, and I really don't know all that much about it. But I have had heaven plunge in on my life on a few occasions, and I wanted to tell you about one of those and to tell you what I gained from that experience in my thinking about heaven and longing for it. Like I said, I don't really know what heaven is like, and in the time I've spent thinking about it, I think I've become less certain about all the facts and fictions that surround our ideas of heaven. But one thing that stays with me that I think is really important and very helpful is thinking about heaven as a place where we will be with God and where we will be able to fully experience and participate in his love for us and in his presence. In one place in the Bible, heaven is described in this way. "Look, the home of God is now among his people. He will live with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them." And where God is, there's love and beauty and healing. There's forgiveness and joy and hope. And the next section there says, "God will remove all of their sorrows. And there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain, for the old world and its evils are gone forever." Already, Fiona has helped us to think about delight and beauty as we experience it on earth, these flashes of ecstasy that leave us longing for something more, for something we never quite find. Beauty seems to get snarled up in brokenness, in regrets or sorrow. The beautiful moment we experience shatters, and we're left longing for that something else, for heaven, as we just read about, longing for a place where there's wholeness and healing and lasting love. About 3 years ago, I experienced one of those moments of ecstasy that Fiona was describing. It was the moment my third son, Samuel, was born. Generally speaking, babies do bring their mothers a great deal of joy. And the first few minutes I had with Samuel and I held him were no exception to that rule. They were, honestly, some of the most beautiful moments of my life. But the reason that a longing for heaven crashed my party and broke in on what's usually just a time of celebration and joy was because even as I held Samuel close, I knew that he wasn't going to stay cradled in my arms, because he was dying. We held him for a few minutes before we realized that Samuel was leaving us. Steve prayed. He asked Jesus to take our baby into his arms and hold him safely for us. And then he said to Samuel, "Run to Jesus, precious boy." That experience of loving Samuel and losing him. Has had a profound effect on my life. I'm sure you can imagine, you can see. I could speak at great length about everything I've thought about pertaining to that time in my life. The things I've struggled with and wondered about, and the things that have amazed me about the time I had with him. I just wanted to share two things with you this morning to focus on two insights that I feel I've gained about heaven, longing for heaven, two kinds of longing. The first kind of longing is my own longing for heaven, which has increased. As Samuel died, there was this sense of separation. There was a splitting apart of the two of us. We'd shared the same space. We'd shared the same body for 8 months. And if you've ever lost anyone dear to you, perhaps someone's moved away or moved out of your life, or perhaps you've had a relationship that was special to you break off, or maybe someone in your life has died, you'll know that in that situation you long for things to be different, and I longed for things to be different for me. And I still have that longing. I want to never have to cry for Samuel again. I long for the pain and the suffering that we endured at that time to be healed. And I'm really desperate for a place and a time where I can be with Samuel again and hold him again. So that promise that we read a minute ago about what heaven is like holds a lot of appeal to me. A place where God is and we are with him, where sorrows are removed, where death and pain are no more. That holds a lot of appeal to me, and I know in my heart that Samuel is already there. He's whole, and he's alive, and he's enjoying the presence of God. I believe this because I trust that Jesus answered Steve's prayer and held out his arms, and that Samuel ran to them. And I believe he's still safely kept there. And one day, it'll be my turn. Jesus will hold his arms out to me, and I'll get to run. And I'll find healing and hope. And I will find Samuel there waiting for me. And I long for that. But the more I thought about my experience, the more clearly a second picture has come into focus for me. An altogether different picture for me of what heaven is like. And it's a picture of God's longing to be with us. I've come to see that God's longing for heaven is like the longing of a mother for the child that she's lost. His longing is like my longing for Samuel. Because for God, heaven offers this opportunity at long last to hold a lost child, to hold you, and to hold me. When you see the photo of me with Samuel, it's not difficult for you to imagine how much I love him or how I long to be with him again. To have it be as if I never lost him. You probably love someone like that in your own life. What is exciting to me is that I've come to see that this is how God views each one of us. Just as deeply as I long for Samuel, our Father God longs for each one of us. He longs for me that way. He longs for you that way. Just imagine that for a moment. Close your eyes if you're brave enough and imagine yourself. Imagine you are a tiny baby, tiny as my Samuel, and imagine the big, loving, and strong hands of God enfolding you and holding you close. This is what I believe heaven will be like.
One morning, when time is done, bright heaven will be a refuge, the city of God Most High. I long for that holy day. This longing, sometimes it captures my heart and carries me far away. Beyond the sky, beyond all telling, the Father Himself will be your light. His arms will hold us, and with His hand He'll wipe away the tears that stain our eyes.
His disciples, do not let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God. Trust also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way? Jesus answered, I am the way, and the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me.
Thank you, Hamish. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Julie. We're living as caterpillars. We long to be butterflies. How can we prepare for new life, for metamorphosis? The song we heard earlier, talking about perfect day, all the different things that happen, and then it finishes, and then home, and then home. Johnny, in her book, says we all have a homing instinct, a home detector, but it doesn't ring for earth. Heaven is about a person. Heaven is about a loving Father. Heaven is about Jesus, who makes heaven home. And He is the one that we long for. I remember a number of years, and this is a story I have perhaps told several times, seeing a program on the television about a lady who was dying. And the program showed how very carefully she had prepared her family for her death, making sure that her children could tie their laces, making sure that the husband could cook, making sure that the family finances were in order, making sure that friends were around to support, getting everything ready. And then the last words in that program, she said, I don't know, but I hope there's a heaven. And somehow it seems so sad that she saw the need to prepare for everything for her family in this life, but she hadn't really seen it important to prepare for her own life in the next. And her hope was a wishful thinking. I hope there's a heaven. But Jesus says that we have a hope that is a certainty. How do we prepare for new life? The passage that Hamish read for us. The context, we often hear it at funerals, don't we? But the context is Jesus before he dies. And he's talking to his close friends who have loved him, who have walked with him. And he's preparing them because he's going to leave them and he's going to die. And he wants them to be able to be ready for that. But it's interesting, he says, don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me, trust me. But then he says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. And as I think about that, I don't think Jesus has gone to prepare heaven for us. I don't think he's up there now just putting the curtains, twiddling them to put them in the right place. He's not just brushing the corners that have the cobwebs, because heaven is perfect already. He does not need to prepare heaven for us. I think what he's talking about there is that he needs to prepare us for heaven. He needs to prepare us to be with him. Heaven is God's home, a place that is perfect in beauty and truth and love. And I think if I went there, I'd sort of mess it up, because I'm not perfect in beauty and truth and love. I think I'd be like a fish out of water in heaven. I couldn't survive, because I'm a caterpillar still. I'm not ready to fly in heaven. We don't really belong there yet. It's funny though, because if you ask a lot of people about heaven, they'll say, oh yes, I'm good enough to get to heaven. But then in another situation, if someone says, I'm definitely going to heaven, and people will think, who does he think he is, imagining that he's better than the rest of us? We have a very mixed idea of what heaven is like. But what Jesus is saying is that he was going to die for his friends. And in that way, he was going to prepare them for heaven. He was going to be punished instead of them. And so that they would be cleansed, they would be forgiven because of what he had done. And it would be possible for them to go to heaven. Not because I'm good and I'm perfect, but because he is, and because he's preparing me for that place in heaven. It's so important, because this is Jesus' home. We can't just barge in, I'm coming to your home, Jesus. But he invites us, his arms are open to welcome us. And he wants us to reply. Please reply to him. It's the most important answer you could ever give anyone. You might live on this earth perhaps 100 years or a little bit less. But after that is so much longer than 100 years. It's so important now to answer. What's the alternative? If we say, I don't want to be with God in his home, then God won't make us. If in this life we don't want God in our lives and we reject him, then we'd hate to spend eternity with him, and so we're not forced to go where he is. But the alternative is unthinkable. To be in a place where there is no goodness which comes from God, where there is no love, where there is no kindness. Everything that makes life beautiful is God created. And if we go to somewhere where God isn't, that would be unimaginably awful. And so this morning, God doesn't want to hit you in the head with a stick. He doesn't want to threaten you. You come with me or else. His arms are open to invite you. He wants you to accept his invitation. He loves you. He wants to be with you today and always. As Julie says, his arms ache for you because he made you. He gave you life. And he wants to be with you. He's done everything so that you might be prepared to go, to spend a lifetime with him here, and then one later in eternity. And he asks you today to accept that gift and to walk each day with him, getting to know him, living in his embrace, so that actually when the time comes, when you go into that cocoon, when you're part of that brown process that we don't know what it quite is, and then when you come out the other side, you're not going to go to a strange place. You're not going to go to a place that you just feel like a fish out of water. You're going to belong. You're going to be going home. I wonder if we could sing that song that we learnt at the beginning of the service. Thank you.
There's a place where the streets shine with the glory of the light. There's a way we can go there. We can live there on time because of you. Because of you. Because of your love. Because of your blood.
Not in heaven yet. And God asks us to live with the taste of eternity in our mouths. And just as we close, we want to think about just how do we live now in the light of eternity. And I want to introduce you, first of all, to Liam Garvey. Liam has come and is coming to be with us for the summer and will be preaching this evening. Just to I think perhaps many of you have met him already. Liam, what do you do?
At present, I have just finished my second year at the Scottish Baptist College, halfway through my training now to become a pastor.
And just interested to know a little bit about your story, how you became a Christian.
Sure. I was brought up in a place called Broxbourne, which is on the far west side of Edinburgh. And generally, I was raised in a family who went to the local Catholic church and so on. So I ended up going to Catholic primary and secondary school as well. So I always had these stories of Jesus around about me, although I didn't really take much notice of them. I thought they were a little bit airy-fairy stories made up that sounded more like something out of Star Wars than actually something that happened. And didn't really pay any attention to it at all. As far as the course of my life went, there's a lot of problems at home, as everyone goes through. There are family problems. In particular, when I was about 8 or 9 years old, I realised that my dad was an alcoholic. And I was the younger of three brothers. Everyone else had known about it. I didn't know too much about it. And it appeared that even the kids at school in my own year knew about it before I did. And that came to the surface one day when I was walking along the corridor. I got bullied a little bit when I was younger. And they played along the corridors on occasions what we call human pinball, where they all line up on either side of the corridor, and when you're walking through, they just push you backwards and forwards, and sometimes you make it through to the end, sometimes you fall over. On this one occasion, I got through, but to be confronted with the school hard man, as we called him, and I just basically told him to get out of my way. And he wouldn't, and he ended up just saying, oh, well, at least my dad's not an alky, or something like that, which resulted in me hitting him, which I'm not proud of. But at that point, very strangely enough, me actually taking that action got me a bit of respect, and I ended up hanging about with this crowd as well. Don't know why, never mind. As the course of my life went a little further, I used the streets to get away from what was happening at home. Things were becoming increasingly difficult for all the family at that time. And my escape was to run around the streets. And from the age of 11, I was involved in the drug scene. And pretty heavily so, even until I came up to university. But around about my fourth year at school, I realised that all the drugs and all the stealing of various things, the life I was living out in the streets, going to fight rival gangs in nearby towns with sticks with nails hanging out the end and things like that. There was just something not quite right. And I believe in those times, there were various times when I was away to carry out these kind of things. And I just felt a little bit of a tug on me. It was almost like someone was tugging my shirt at the back of me, as if to say, you know, wait a minute, have a think about it. But I didn't really pay any attention. I believe that was God calling on me, because I believe God calls on us all at various times in our lives. And eventually, as I said, in around about fourth year, I decided the only way I could really, really escape everything that was going on at home was to get some grades and get to university, because getting to university meant I could move away. And so, purely by God's grace, I have no idea how I managed to do it, purely by God's grace, I managed to get myself grades and came to Abertay University to study nursing. And I completed my four-year training, and I have been a nurse for 4 years before I took the steps to come into ministry. But it was actually during that time at university, there was a girl in my class, and I still had no concept, no belief in God at all. You just wouldn't find me in a church at all throughout the rest of my life. Funny that, isn't it? And I noticed this one girl in particular, and she was a very, very gentle character, really lovely girl, and the thing that really made her stand out in the first instance was that she never, ever swore. And to me, that was absurd. I used to swear like a trooper. And it just struck me that she just lived a life of... she was just so genuine. And I ended up chatting away to her one day and I asked why. And she said it was because she was a Christian and she believed in God. And I was shocked at that, because I thought Christians were all like Ned Flanders of The Simpsons. And I was just puzzled that a Christian could be so normal and so lovely and so nice. And we ended up having chats about it over the coming months, and she had invited me to come along to the Christian Union at Dundee University, the one we ended up going to. And I did that for about 6 months, but I refused to go to church. I just wouldn't step foot inside a church building at all. And as the 6 months went on, you know, there were various times where I was just like, I don't think I'm buying this. I don't know if I believe in this. It just all seems a bit too distant. It just doesn't seem too real to me. And I suppose to an extent, I was quite horrible to this person at times by just rubbishing the things that were being said to me and said to me in love. And I suppose you could say I was... in a way, trying to disprove the kind of things that were being offered to me in various ways. But eventually, I was coming around to it. I was reading a Bible that this girl had given me, and I started to read various things in it, some of which touched me profoundly, some of which I didn't really mind too much. You know, I read things like, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest." I wasn't really that weary and heavy laden. Or so I thought. You know, there were various things that didn't really seem to hit home, but there was this whole concept about there being a God, which I eventually came round to. And I remember having chats in this girl's house, and about 6 months afterwards, I was leaving her flat one night after quite a lengthy chat with her and her friends, and she just said, you know, give it a go, you'll never regret it. And it was from leaving her flat in the west end of Dundee, where I now stay, down to the centre of town, where I had a flat at that time. I just had the most amazing experience of God. I just spoke with him the whole way down. It was just like a conversation I would have with any of you here. It was just so, so personal. And God just unveiled himself to me, not in any big flashing lights or anything like that, but I just knew 100% within my heart that I was speaking with God, and the things I was saying to him, he was hearing me. The things I was asking him to do, he was answering me. And I became a Christian, right opposite the Salvation Army store, actually, on the way down, which is funny enough as well. But it was just an incredible experience. And that was the 7th of February 1989, and I first went to church on the 9th. Yeah, that would work. And I never looked back since, really. I haven't regretted it at all. She was right.
Just last, what difference does it make being a Christian today?
It's in every single aspect of your life, really. Being a Christian just affects everything. I mean, someone once said, can't remember who it is, but there is no question that faith in Christ can't answer. There's nothing that life can throw at you that the Bible, the book God's given us, doesn't have an answer for. It might not say it directly, but when you peer through the words that God tells us are living and active, then we see the message, we see what God has to say to us. And it makes a difference. From before, how I would cope with things, I would cope with things by things going badly in my life, by taking drugs and things like that, and taking out aggression on other people and other things. Whereas there's a whole new way of doing it that's right, that doesn't hurt anyone else, that doesn't hurt yourself either. And to me, that was one of the biggest differences.
Thank you very much.